Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 455th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor, the director of Program of Practice Support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada, and I'm also a professor at the University of Alberta. And today, we're going to go over a relatively hot topic. It's going to have relevance to COVID, although not directly derived from COVID research, but we're going to talk about it. And we have a peer member in the studio with us. Nick, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. So I'm Nick. I'm a pharmacist in Montreal, so I'm French, obviously. Am I the first French guest you got?
I can't remember. You might be. I can't remember if we had Emily on the podcast or not. But
yeah. We usually screen people better, but you got through.
Yeah, but since James is so nice, I don't know, Mike told you, he offered me to speak in French, and he's going to translate everything.
I will, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, I'm a pharmacist in Montreal. I'm a pharmacist in Montreal. I work mainly in a primary care team in Montreal, and I'm a clinical professor at the Faculty of Pharmacy at University of Montreal. And as you said, Mike, I'm a member of PEER. I like to call myself the French franchise of PEER. And I've been working with PEER for almost 2 years now.
And Mike, because it's a controversial topic, we decided to bring Nick in so that people could blame him.
Right, yep. Because I think that in the end, anything that anyone's unhappy with will just shift blame to him, because it can't be me.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, what's great is they're going to send me stuff in English, and I don't get it, so.
Yeah.
You'll send it back. Please submit in French.
So what we're going to do is about 2.5 months ago, Mike, we did a podcast on some of the aspects around using masks for healthcare professionals. And since that time, we've not relooked at it. Well, we sort of tweaked, relooked at the evidence a little bit more in detail, and also looked at all of the evidence that we could find around masks for the general public. And so we're going to do both of those things.
Right. And so what happened was, Nick and I were within PEER, were assigned this work, and we started to get into it. And the more we got into it, the more interesting it was, because on a superficial glance, when you look at the RCTs, you would say overall nothing really works. And when they were combined into meta-analysis, the vast majority indicated nothing worked, which is kind of in opposition. You know, we will pick RCTs and meta-analysis, that's the highest level evidence. But it's in opposition to the observational research, which the observational research says that they work amazingly well. And the reason that might be unreliable is because if you take a group of people who agreed to wore a mask of their own volition, and then you take a group of people who didn't wear masks, and then you compare them afterwards, the people who were wearing masks are probably different. They've probably done other things like wash their hands more, were more careful, all of those things. So in a sense, you're not comparing mask to no mask. You're comparing careful to less careful. Mm-hmm. And that is a big concern. And that's why we wanted to focus on the RCT data. And our first look at it from other people's systematics review was indicated or suggested that nothing was really working. But Nick noticed some things early on that might suggest that was being misinterpreted. I don't know, Nick, do you want to jump in there and say more about that?
Well, what do you want to talk about specifically? So you want to talk...
Well, tell us what you think about what I just said. The observational and choosing RCT evidence and what your interpretation of the research at kind of the 30,000 feet overlook of what it looked like from looking at the systematic reviews. What was your interpretation of them?
Well, I think we quickly found tons of limitations in the systematic reviews we had. So it really depends on we found what 11 systematic reviews overall,
I think,
something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Just one thing that was quite surprising is all of these were published, I don't know, between 2010 and 2020 or something like that. And so they should have had all the same papers, right? And we actually found no two systematic reviews that had the same papers. Like some of them were obviously in more than one, but these were all very, very different, which doesn't make any sense.
Right. It is that that was one of the problems with it. I would also say one of the things that stuck out to me, and we had debated this, and then you kind of identified two studies. This we're jumping a bit to the community one now, where they actually looked at. We're closer to what we really have our question about is wearing masks in a community, will it protect you from viral infections? And despite there being a lot of different randomized controlled trials, there's really only two that approach the kind of question that we had. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. And in some meta-analysis, which was surprising again, is that they did combine RCTs looking at masks, like in healthcare workers, and masks in sick people, and masks, and like you said, in community, and masks, and they were combining all of these trials together.
Yeah, that again was amazing to me that they would take comparison of masks versus when someone comes into the emergency and they're sick and they get sent home, they would be given a mask to wear at home, but only when someone else was in the room. And they'd add that in with a comparison of N95 masks versus surgical masks. Like it was in healthcare workers, it was kind of crazy the way the studies were combined. And it was no wonder it was very hard to tease out. But I guess one of the concerns that struck me was there's this pervasive idea from the literature that masks don't work. And we actually didn't feel that you could say that. You couldn't also say that they work because of the way the data had been pooled and combined.
Yeah. So in the end, we just decided to make our own systematic review.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're going to talk today about that a bit. And we're going to talk. So we're going to hit again a little bit on the healthcare workers because we suggested things. There might be an indication of benefit, but we needed to clarify that. And so we have done a little bit better job. And then we'll spend a lot of time on the community stuff because I think that's very relevant to what we want to talk about. James, do you have anything?
Yeah, no. And just the key features are when people are hearing the evidence out there around masks, there's almost no evidence around COVID.
Yeah.
You know, period. So it's all about sort of looking at other viral illnesses and so on. And we are specifically talking about, as Mike said, we're specifically talking about randomized controlled trials. When you hear about the evidence around masks and how people should be wearing them, it is primarily or sometimes exclusively only looking at cohort studies, which doesn't mean that that data is invalid. Some of it's very useful. Some of it is informative, and it certainly shows an effect, but we're focusing on the randomized controlled trials. We'll talk a little bit about the cohort evidence as we go forward, but our job was to look at the randomized controlled trials, realizing that that's the highest level of evidence. It's not perfect. And obviously, there's no blinding that goes on. Relatively
speaking. And I'd add that I think some people rely too on experimental studies. So I see like figures and graphs on the internet all the time looking at percentages of particles being blocked by N95 or by that whatever. And I think some people rely on that a lot. And as Mike said, this is problematic because it only looks at one probably minor angle of the whole prevention thing.
Yeah, but it's a very powerful message. I mean, and you know, in theory, as far as we know, this is spread. It's a respiratory virus.
Well, and that's the thing. We're not even sure.
Yeah, we're not a thousand. Yeah,
isn't that amazing? Yeah,
yeah. But you know that it certainly is one of the potential ways, and there's no doubt. And all you have to do is look at those studies. You know, the N95 versus surgical masks versus cloth masks. They do allow different amounts of material to come through, you know.
Yes, for sure.
But
does that translate into
disease? Oh, yeah. No, exactly.
Right? Those are the big questions that, unfortunately, that kind of research, well, interesting and as you say, James, compelling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I
think Nick would agree. Like, when you talk about the amount of particles that get through and you're dropping it by you know, 1,000 per breath down to 1 per breath or something. Oh, yeah. I'm just making these up, of course. That tells such a compelling story, but it doesn't actually let you know whether you're going to avoid getting sick or not.
Yeah. So that's sort of the caveat around what we've got. So Nick, why don't you go through a little bit? Just we have talked about healthcare workers, but what our sort of bottom line is, what we found.
Well, so we looked at different things. We looked at comparing N95 to surgical mask. We looked at surgical mask versus cloth mask. We didn't find anything looking at mask versus no mask, which is probably not surprising because, I mean, we're talking healthcare workers here, and I guess no one would be comfortable not wearing a mask at all time. And what we found, like Mike said, the podcast you guys did before, I mean, it's still the same message. We just have a little bit different numbers because we did the analysis ourselves. So when comparing N95 to surgical masks, we got a 1% absolute difference. So an NNT of about 100. So I don't know. Would you guys consider that a clinically significant difference?
Well, putting the numbers, and what we're looking at is the risk of developing a flu-like illness.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you're totally right, James. Yeah, you're right. So, and all we're going to talk about, all the studies were looking typically at 4 different outcomes. So either confirmed influenza, because as you said, we got no RCTs conducted with COVID-19. So most of them were actually conducted during influenza seasons. Some looked at confirmed viral infection, just any kind of virus. Some looked at flu-like illness or influenza-like illness. And then we had any clinically significant RESP infection of some kind.
Yeah. And they had, those are, there were numbers for each one of those endpoints, but the ones that we found in particular was a reduction in the risk of flu-like illness. Most of them didn't show any difference in the lab-confirmed influenza and so on, just the risk of flu-like illness. And that's the 1% that you're talking about, Nick.
Yep.
The 4 trials, it was ballpark about 4.5% down to about 3.5% for the surgical mask versus the N95. So about a 1% difference. And I don't know if that's a lot. I would be surprised if it was all that much different. The N95 is does let fewer particles go through. So maybe, but it's not going to eliminate it.
So there are a number of caveats in this that are really important. And one is just what the group was indicating. These are flu, it was flu illness was the main target of most of these studies. Flu illness, even the influenza, as James indicated when he talked about the absolute event rates of kind of 3.5 versus 4.5, that's the most any of the events actually occurred. In the flu, it was far less than that. Mm-hmm. So it's so hard to tease out. Now, if we extrapolate to I'm a healthcare worker and I'm on a ward and my job is to take care of COVID patients, my chance of contracting it will obviously be considerably higher. And the cost of that are more than just my own health there once I get it and still don't know I have it, but coming into work and transferring it and all that. So the importance of wearing the mask and that small benefit may actually be quite meaningful. And because the baseline numbers go up, if the relative benefits stayed the same of kind of a 20, 25% reduction, it could obviously become quite meaningful if the numbers were higher. And we don't know that. We absolutely don't know that. But we do know the relative benefit was kind of a 25%, 30% reduction. And so these are the things that come into it that you can't capture with this data at the present time, but it is indicating that there might be something meaningful happening there.
Yeah.
And as Nick kind of indicated, because the surgical mask is working relatively well on its own, do we need the N95 for every patient encounter? So if I'm seeing someone in a community where COVID rates are low in the community and I'm seeing them for something that they have to come in, let's say a wound check where I have to actually visualize it or I have to see them in person for something, then then the baseline risk, do I really need to wear an N95 every time I see them, given the size of the advantage in a low risk population is quite small? Yeah. Probably not. But in a high risk population, it might make more sense. And that's interestingly, that's exactly what we did. But our study actually verified that that's probably the right approach. Is in higher risk populations, maybe we should be using N95, and in lower risk environments, we probably should just a surgical mask is adequate.
Yeah, and that's I'd say one of the main limitations of the studies we have. So we don't have these numbers. They're probably a lot higher, I guess, if like N95 were only to be used in specific high risk situations. But we don't know, really.
Yeah, we don't know. You're exactly right. But there were other limitations. Nick, you pointed out some of the ones, like in these studies, people could have caught the flu outside of the work environment.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think you were the one that told me, like, if we think about it, they're not wearing the mask. The they're living their lives. They're going home. Their friends, their family are sick. They're going to the grocery store, et cetera, and they could be contracting flu when they're not wearing the mask at work.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just one other limitation that makes it probably a lot harder to show a difference in these studies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, and as with any study, the masks are not necessarily worn consistently and everything. So there's all sorts of features.
I don't know what you're talking about, James.
Yeah.
Every time I go at the grocery store right now, everyone's wearing a mask like in a perfect way.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's difficult to come up and do these trials properly, which is why we rely a lot on the cohort trials because of the difficulty sometimes of doing this. So that's the sort of N95 versus a surgical mask, but there was also one study of a surgical mask versus cloth masks.
So yes, that one was in Vietnam, was it, mm-hmm. James? Mike?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, they compared surgical masks to cloth masks. We're not exactly sure what the cloth masks were. They mm-hmm. had the description of three. What was it? It was three. Do you remember, Mike?
No, I don't remember the exact cloth. And that's the thing, right? Now there's so many variances of cloth masks.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're being worn in public, where this the only cloth mask study we have is actually in healthcare mm-hmm. workers. So how do we translate that into, we're going to tell you now that maybe cloth masks aren't as good as surgical masks in a healthcare environment, but no one's wearing cloth masks in a healthcare environment I'm aware of.
And just as you said, like people are buying masks on internet right now, and who knows like which mask is better I don't know. So
the Chicago Blackhawks one I have is the best one.
Oh, okay.
You heard it here first.
So in the case of this study, they were a two-layer cotton fabric, but no filter layers or anything like that. The difference, I think, in the event rates is key, though. With the surgical mask, it was only 0.3% of people, and with the cloth mask, it was around 2%. So it's, you know, it's not a big difference again, the event rates are so low, it would be hard to tease anything out. And this is, I think, the only outcome that they found it in.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and what we're talking about is over, depending on what, about a four-week period. Some of them are a little bit longer, you know, 2 to 3 months. But that's the time frame that we're talking about.
Yeah, and it's 4 weeks. And this is, like I said, low event rates and... we can't say anything about how they work in public. These studies also, and we'll talk about this again, they don't tell us what my chance, if I'm wearing a mask, of helping you avoid illness because I wore a mask. Mm-hmm. It doesn't talk about preventing infection in other people. It only talked about preventing infections in the individuals wearing masks. Yeah. And the big advocacy now is that you're preventing infection in others, which I don't disagree with at all. I think that's an absolutely reasonable thing to think about. But this research can't find that the way it was designed.
So that's the mask for health. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, just maybe one last thing, James, on that. So the numbers are very, very, very low, as you both said, and that's definitely a problem to tease a difference. And we did try to see if there was any evidence on mask versus no mask. And technically, we did find two trials, but in the end, really, it wasn't looking at that. So one of the trial was actually interesting. It was over 1,000 individuals randomized to mask versus standard use of anything. And when you actually look at numbers, you end up seeing that about 99% of the control group actually used the mask at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really hard to say.
Yeah. There was only one study I remember, and it was I think it was a Japanese study with like 30 people that truly didn't have a mask in the other arm, and it was obviously way too small to see any differences. And then another study said they had a control group, but it turned out it was just a cohort. It was another observational type study design. So,
oh yeah, I forgot that one. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so we don't really know. And I don't know that we, you know, I'd love for research to be on this, but not in a time of COVID.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be one of them.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think any ethics right now and allow for a study without a mask. But it would be interesting to go back in a time without COVID and have that kind of research. But that's retrospective thinking. It's not going to happen. And I don't think it'll happen anytime in the near future. Oh, nor does it need to for me. Nor does it need to for me. Maybe it does for Nick, but maybe not for me.
So that's the best available evidence that we could find for masks for healthcare workers. When we're looking at randomized controlled trials, it doesn't mean it's definitive. It certainly is suggestive of some differences between the different types of masks and so on. And we wanted to like clarify what we had come up with when we talked about in our previous podcast. And so I think we'll cut our podcast at this point, because what we're going to do for the next podcast is basically talk about all the evidence that we have for using it in the general public, which is probably of, if not similar interest, even more interest from the perspective of what we should be doing, because while we are all part of the general public, and so we'll put that into context for everyone. And in fact, we'll publish it very, very quickly, right, you know, from a time perspective, right after this one. So so anything else, Mike?
No, I think that's it.
So we'll just leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.